Hello, and welcome to another episode of Stew in the Nut, an online radio show and podcast focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We're here to give you an honest opinion, a different perspective, and hopefully a few laughs. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our own perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our chat room, via our Facebook page, and of course, on Twitter. Keep it funky. And with that, everyone, welcome to another episode of Stew and the Nun. This is Stew here. What did you think of that funky intro, Nun?
Well, I tell you, man, I don't shave my head for 2 days, and you get all hippie on me. You know, like, I dig it, man. I dig it. Remind me of that old cadence, you know, where, like, you know, if I die in the old drop zone, you know, like, put two speakers by my head, put a mixer by my feet. You know, rock my soul to the grateful dead, you know, if my Lord I shall meet, you know, like that's pretty cool, man. I dug it.
Dude, that was some funkadelic 70s kind of funky porn kind of music there. We're keeping it groovy. We're keeping it real.
Yeah. I mean, that's some barracks porn right there, you know, like, yeah, because, you know, no one would dare play that in the company area.
No. You wouldn't go cruising by in your Chevy Cavalier through the parking lot of the barracks with that going.
Yeah, no. But everyone knows you had a Chevy Cavalier.
With a fake cell phone antenna on the back. Make it look like you were
That's
somebody.
Right.
That's in honor right. of an old squaw leader of mine who used to do that. Had a piece of crap Cavalier and had a cell phone antenna in the 80s on his car phone, on his... when in fake $5 ones from Pep Boys, he tried to act like he was all that in a bag of chips.
Yeah. Well, you never know, you know. He could have been somebody special. He could have been on a special team or something.
There we go. But hey, welcome everyone to another episode of Stew and the Nun. That was the first time that Nun heard that. I've been recording a couple different intros and outros, and I was excited about that one. Told him I couldn't wait for him to hear it, so we got a little distracted, but glad everyone could join us tonight on this 8 o'clock Tuesday evening here at the Veteran Radio Syndicate. Joining us for another episode of Stew and the Nun, I think is episode 48 tonight, maybe, or something like that. How you doing, Nun?
Man, I'm good, man. And we're getting up there. We're getting up on our one-year anniversary of being standalone as Stew and the Nun, 5 or 6 year anniversary of everything else, but... No, this is great. You know, really excited. I just want to give a shout out to the Veteran, you know, Radio Syndicate and Grunt Style because, you know, if you go to our Facebook page, you'll see a video of them, you know, putting their money where their mouth is, and great stuff. And it's great to be part of a group that, you know, are men of action or people of action. And don't just idly stand by passively, you know, hoping that, you know, things are going to be okay and get better. They actually, like, get out, put a plan into action, execute it, and then are behind the people they're supposed to be behind and kind of keep their word. And super impressed. We've only been with the syndicate for a short period of time. And we're personally, I'm proud to see people doing what they're doing. And I know a lot of people could be capitalizing on certain situations right now, but they're not capitalizing. They're demonstrating support and generosity and super impressed. So I encourage everyone, go to our Facebook page, check out that video, and see what the folks that we're now with are all about. Great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, not only do they give money, a lot of money, to that to the law enforcement agency, they also raised quite a bit for the Fisher House, one of our favorite charities. And so, you know, these guys, some of them may be a little rough around the edges. They may still think they're downrange and party and live like that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the bottom line is they're not all self-indulging. It's not all about themselves. They're doing it for the greater good and under the banner of selfless service, which is part of what this show's about. But
no, yeah. It's pretty cool. And, you know, great shout out to the Fisher House, because without doing something charitable for the Fisher House, you and I in this radio show would not exist. It all started, right, in conversations involving certain contributions to a book that was raising money for the Fisher House, right?
Yeah.
That's how the original crew kind of all came together, like, hey, maybe we should do a show.
That's kind of how it went. Yeah. That's right. It goes that goes way years, back.
Man, that's years ago.
Yeah.
And look at us now.
Now we're joined on a veteran radio syndicate running radio shows out of the North, again, out of the North studio and the mobile Southern studio there in the great state of Tejas.
That's right. And, you know, to bring support for Texas tonight, where our guest is actually relocated and now hailing from the Republic. And so I look forward to bringing him on the air here in probably 10 to 12 minutes. But great stuff. And we are in the mobile studio tonight. So if there's technical issues, it's all on me. So my bad if it goes south.
Well, I hope mine don't go. If mine goes south, then we're really in trouble, because I'm sitting in the home studio surrounded by monitors and microphones. So the hey, you know, we got a few minutes before we bring on our first. Do you want to go any more in our first guest? You want to talk about him anymore? Or
no, I do not.
Okay,
I'll talk about him when I bring him on.
There we go. No, you got to get lippy with me now. All right. I want to talk a little bit about. Yeah, let's rant a little bit right now. I'll open up to you, my friend, my brother. Is there anything you want to chat about before I get into something?
Well, man, I'm probably not going to make any friends by saying this. But, man, I got hit probably 6 or 7 times today asking me to write a piece to kind of, like, denounce a veteran that gave a Purple Heart to Donald Trump. And, people are saying things like, oh, man, that just devalued mine, or I don't like Trump, or, you know, Trump doesn't understand the veteran cause, or, you know, whatever it is. And so I'm going to say this. I don't care, like, what political side of the spectrum you're on, doesn't make or break me in terms of, like, if I'm going to respect your opinion or not. I respect the opinion and intelligence of people on all kinds of ends of that spectrum. But the Purple Heart is an award that a person is awarded. They are the recipient of. That's theirs. It belongs to them. It's an individual award. It's not a unit award. It is not a blanketed award. It is an award that they received and they earned or they own. They can do whatever they want with it. And just because, like, one person felt so inspired to present it to Donald Trump doesn't mean that anyone that's ever got, like, a Purple Heart is now a Trump supporter, or that if they hate Trump, you know, like, now their award's worthless. Like, that might be the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And, I'm an infantry guy, so bragging about Purple Hearts, you know, like, where I come from, like, you got a stack of Purple Hearts, you know, like, A, either, like, you were in, like, the worst day of your life, or B, you sucked at your job. And, don't like, try and, like, be the pitchfork brigade on one guy because he's got something that means something to him that he's trying to make a nice gesture to someone that he likes. If somebody, like, you know, came in and, if someone came in and did it with a CIB, I'd feel the same way. Like, that's theirs.
Right.
Yeah, but, yeah. Troy, I'm going to let you go for a second, and I'm going to handle some business.
All right. No, I'm with you 100% on that. It's the guy's its own personal thing, you know. John Kerry threw his over a wall, or people do all kind of stuff with their award. They earned or were awarded whatever they got, and if the guy wanted to give it to him, then so be it. It is not on us to judge, nor is it our opinion worth a damn that it even needs to be expressed. If you got a Purple Heart or an Army Achievement Medal or a freaking Army Service Ribbon, you want to go give to somebody, go ahead. You can go to the client, you can order one online, replace it. Not a big deal. It's not the piece of fabric. It's not the piece of metal. It's what got you that. That is what matters. The other thing is just an outward representation to show other people and just to be a visual. You know what you did. Just like all the people that have done heroic, awesome things that never got awarded anything. But they know what they did. Or they've done something there's not an award for. Maybe saved a soldier's life from killing himself. Maybe, you know, stepped in and stopped something bad from happening. But they, or have a line of people behind them that would walk in the gates of hell for them. There's no award for that. But they know in their heart what they've obtained and what they've achieved. And that's more than any piece of fabric they can stick on them. Anyways, sorry, I kind of went off your rant a little bit there.
Yeah, no, like, no, I think the bigger thing that bothers me about it, Troy, is simply that the idea or the notion that one person's military experience translates to the complete and total veteran community. That's just not how it works. You know, like, my experience was different than your experience. While there's some similarities and we share in some same thought processes, it was not the same and it was different. And I really kind of get bummed out when people in the veteran community try to make it seem like because, you know, they're veterans and they had this experience that therefore everyone in the community should be exactly like them or agree with them. We're a huge demographic. I know, like, we're a tiny demographic, but we're in the millions. When you think about the total number, I think it's like 26.2 million or something, veterans in America. I mean, like, that's almost the population of Canada. And two, like, not everyone's going to agree. People are different walks of life. People are different faith bases. People are different things. So, like, get over it. Get over yourself. Like, if you don't like a guy, just say you don't like a guy. Or you don't like a girl, say you don't like a girl. And then be done with it. You know, have like a reason for not liking them. But like, don't try and be like, well, because this guy gave him a Purple Heart, I can't possibly like that guy because he just doesn't respect or understand or comprehend what that actually means. The fact that you would say something so asinine makes me believe that perhaps you don't. But anyway, that's me.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about tonight's show. We have a wonderful guest. This gentleman created a wonderful website called The Truth About Guns, and it's really cool for a lot of different things. One, it's got a bunch of different writers coming from different demographics, walks of life, geographical locations. It is, you know, considered one of the subject matter authorities on guns. It's unique visitors daily. Rankings for those people that track that kind of thing is off the charts. This gentleman that kind of, you know, founded it and heads it up, he's a great guy. He's a charitable guy. I'm saying that not just because I've heard tales of his awesomeness. I've witnessed his awesomeness in terms of assisting veteran outdoors, with firearm manufacturers, with press coverage, with fundraising drives, but just a fine gentleman. You know, he was an East Coaster. He made his way down to the fine Republic. He's living in the ATX, Austin, Texas. His name's Robert Fraga, and he's a friend of mine, and I'm excited to have him on the show. Rob, can you hear us?
Yes, you're too kind. You forgot to mention that I beat my wife, for example.
Minor oversight on my part. Please forgive me.
It's not on my resume usually, so I just, you know. No, actually, I'm divorced, and it wasn't because of twice, and not because of beating either wife. You know, so I just
I like
just, you know, put that in there. So I appreciate it. That's a very kind introduction.
Well, I like how you felt the need to quantify the fact. That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, well, we appreciate you coming on the show. We've wanted to have you on for quite some time, and the reason, you know, we want to talk to you, and we've had some Second Amendment guys on the show and gals on the show in the past, but your website's really one of, like, the authorities, and, you know, just in the name alone, the truth about guns. I know that people seek out your website, you know, on both sides of the fence, because you guys are known for objectivity, for statistical accuracy. But why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what motivated you to get started, how it's been, and how it got you where you're at today.
Okay. Well, you're right about one thing, or several things. I mean, if you keep complimenting, I'm keep telling you you're right about everything. But the truth about guns I called it that when I started it. And I started it just sitting down at my computer with a WordPress program and just started writing about guns and gun issues. But I called it the truth about guns because I wanted to keep myself honest. And we've done that. We do our very best to tell the truth about guns, good guns, bad guns, about Second Amendment issues. We try very hard to keep ourselves honest. We have a great bunch of commentators from all walks of life, a lot of veterans, a lot of police officers, college professors. Over 72% of our audience is college educated or better. And in the comment section, they keep us honest. How I started it? Well, I had a website called The Truth About Cars, and I sold that, and I was looking for something else to do. And I did a review of a Benelli website for another website about e-commerce, and I just started getting back into guns. I come from a traditionally anti-gun family, and I had lived in England for 14 years, so I hadn't really touched a gun there for some strange reason. And I came back, and I just sort of started to get into it again and started to write hard. And in terms of I just kept writing and writing and writing and writing and writing. And through the hard work, we went from zero page views and zero readers per month to we're currently somewhere between 2.5 to 3 million readers per month. We publish every hour. So we're the hardest working gun blog in the world, and we're now the most popular gun blog in the world.
The fact that you guys are not just daily but hourly, that's crazy impressive. But, you know, getting, you know, into the millions unique visitors, you know, that's crazy impressive.
Well, it took us hard work. It really, that's about it. I have a genetic defect that makes me a blogger. Well, that's another problem or advantage, depending on how you look at it.
Well, Troy can appreciate that.
I just have to say that those, you know, there's plenty of room in this world for people who work hard. But life is short, but a lot of jobs are like endless marathons. And you have to have stamina. And any of your veterans out there who are looking to start a new job or anything, I can give you a piece of advice, which is very simple. Just find something you love to do and just hammer it. Just keep after it because, you know, that's the way you succeed is through sheer dogged persistence. But you have to find something you love because there's just it's just very difficult to sustain a long pace of a long period of time. And that goes for any business at all, whether it's making T-shirts or writing gun blogs or manufacturing firearms. It just has to be something where you are dedicated to it and dedicated to it on a long-term basis.
Hey, Robert, this is Troy. How you doing, man? Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you, I mean, as someone who is, I don't know, I've been a blogger since about 2005, having written on, at one point, about 7 or 8 blogs at one time, including, you know, getting paid for several of them, you know, a little bit here and there. I can appreciate the difficulty in trying to post once an hour. I mean, back when I was heavily blogging, I was lucky. I was really aiming for once a day. Is this your full-time thing? I mean, are you able to make enough revenue on this where you can just focus on this and do that, and all the administration of overhead, that it takes to run a site like this that I'm very familiar with. I mean, this would be a full-time job to do once an hour, line everything up, get your photos in there, all that kind of stuff. Are you able to just do this full-time?
Yes, Jeff, that's a thriving business. We are advertiser sponsored. It took us about 4 years to break even, but it was mostly sweat equity. As you know, it doesn't cost you much to sit down and write. So, I have 5 full-time employees and about 30 to 40 writers who dip in here and there.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. Do you review and approve every post, or do you trust your authors and they just put it up there and you handle the scheduling?
I still write about 50 to 60% of the content myself. So I'm very good about editing and approving that. I have a managing editor. Who takes material from other people and puts it in. I still do the edit on most of everything. I'm just OCD that way. I like, you know, no passive construction, short sentences. It's a site for readers. You know, if you like to read, it's a site that has really good writing. I would say that, having, you know, cranking out 60% of the content. But it's a place where we pride ourselves on our literary nature. It's written at about a college age, which is kind of interesting, because I just read recently that 42% of Americans can't read above a fifth grade level. So it's kind of cut out a lot of our potential audience. But if you like good writing, you know, that's where it is. And it's truthful. Writing is passionate and truthful.
Yeah, it is pretty impressive. I mean, like I say, you do have a lot of content out there. You've seemed to become the go-to for a lot of mainstream media outlets. And I mean, besides your stuff going viral from a lot of friends of mine who always share your stories with me, if I don't happen to get there first, what has been the reaction from mainstream media? Do you get called on much by them, or do you just get called out by them?
Okay, first of all, you got to say something nasty about me. I'm getting very uncomfortable here. Okay, you got to criticize the website somehow. All this compliments is just driving me crazy.
Oh, your blue sucks. You need to change the color. How's that?
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, that's true. The blue does have controversy. The mainstream media, as you know, is not exactly what you would call pro gun rights. I think the best example of how the media dealt with me personally was, there was a Washington Post front page article feature on me, of all people. And it was there were about 8,000 comments, and I would say 7,998 of them were talking about my penis size, my background, all kinds of stuff. So the mainstream media is obviously antagonistic to gun rights, and they were extremely antagonistic towards us. We're in a ghetto. The gun rights, even though we're the biggest, you got to still think to yourself, if it's 3 million readers a month, that's nothing compared to a CBS or a Washington Post or the New York Times. It's big. I mean, it's certainly, we have an influence, but we're preaching to the converted. The mainstream media just doesn't want to deal with the facts of the matter. They don't want to hear common sense, to use their term, analysis of gun control laws, of what the civilian disarmament people want to do. So, you know, we're sort of a micro niche in the media, and the mainstream media pretty much ignores us. I get calls from radio stations that have pro-gun shows on them. Events sometimes get quoted. Some of my writers get quoted in mainstream media publications. But generally speaking, they just ignore us. I think that's pretty much the bottom line there.
Okay. Well, let me ask you about your gun reviews, gear reviews. You have quite a bit on there. Do you get a lot of that sent to you from these vendors for you to write a review? And do you sometimes write bad ones, and do they appreciate that, or do you never hear from them again?
Well, we are called the truth about guns, and we feel that firearms, of course, are a life or death proposition for people. So we tell the absolute bare knuckle truth about a gun. If it sucks, we say so. I can name a few examples. The Remington R51 was a complete disaster, and we called them out. And my man Nick Leghorn, is the testing evaluation editor, was actually kicked off the stand at SHOT Show, which is the media get together every year in Las Vegas. And we got, I think, Charter Arms called out one of their guns, and they just they called on the phone and gave me like 40 minutes of yelling about all sorts of stuff. But generally, you know, the one good thing about the firearms industry, it's not very big, and it's full of smaller entrepreneurs. There are a few Remingtons and Freedom Groups, and, you know, they're not doing too well with all that, putting all that together. But generally speaking, we're talking about fairly small companies. And they're good people. I mean, I used to do The Truth About Cars, and all the people in the automotive industry are bad people. They're not the kind of people, you shake your hand, you count your fingers afterwards. The firearms industry, maybe because they're embattled by anti-firearms freedom people, but they're, generally speaking, really open-minded, good people. And often they'll send us a firearm to review, and they say, go ahead, you know, tell us exactly what's wrong with it. You know, we want to know. So we've built up a credibility, not just amongst our readers, who are, it's a sacred trust that they have in us, and we won't betray that, and that's in the title of the blog, but also with the manufacturers. They know what we're about. If they're going to send us a gun, they're going to get a review. It's going to talk about it, warts and all. And if they don't send us a gun and they freeze us out, and that does happen occasionally, we'll go buy the gun. You can buy a gun these days and sell it and maybe lose 25-30% after you fired maybe 500,000 rounds through it. So it's not that expensive for us to circumvent the testing and evaluation process. So basically, I'd say the firearms industry has been very supportive of us. They're a little slow to coming around to the fact that they really need to advertise with us. We get more readers in 2 days than a magazine gets in a month. So, but they still want to see that big, glossy, full-page ad in the magazine for $5,000 when they could pretty much own us for that same amount of money. But, yeah, it's good. They're good people. Anybody who's dealt with the firearms industry knows these are, generally speaking, excellent people to do business with.
Yeah, I think you'd probably hold yourself to the – you would be your site would be viewed as more credible, because I know it was a back even before the web – back in the days when people would get Guns and Ammo and all these different gun magazines, most of the reviews were looked at with a lot of skepticism because those same manufacturers were big advertisers in those magazines. So they really knew they couldn't say anything bad. And so that, you know, people would be like, oh, they wrote great about FN or about Ruger. Well, yeah, Ruger has like 4 ad pages in there. Of course they're going to write good about them. So I would imagine they would look at your site to be a little bit more objective.
Well, that's where we made our bones, is that still 75% of our traffic on a daily basis are gun reviews. And people trust them, and they can trust them, because we're completely honest about what we find. And that allowed us to grow in the market. You're right. The only way people could find out whether a gun was a real turkey was through forums or talking to other people around them. We have great reviewers who write funny and interesting reviews, and we just tell it like it is. So if a trigger sucks or if a gun jams or doesn't make it through 500 rounds, we're going to sell them. We're going to tell them exactly. And people respect that because they want the truth. I mean, that's the great thing about the internet, is that there are a lot of people out there who don't want sugar-coated reality. They actually want the honest-to-God truth, and that's what we provide.
Right. Well, that's good. I got a couple questions for you. One is from our chat room. They would like to know what, in your opinion, what is the best concealed carry weapon?
Well, it depends on concealed carry. That, of course, there are a lot of variables, but I'm not going to dodge the question. For me, it's a, well, if you're that's tough. All right. I'll say this. I'd say a commander size 1911 is my go-to concealed carry. But it's heavy, which is good because it keeps the recoil down. But it hides beautifully. It really is a great gun to conceal. Otherwise, I don't know, you could go with a Smith & Wesson 42 for a pocket carry, which is great. But I don't know, the best gun is the one you have, right? But for me, it's the, and I like the, by the way, I also like the Car CM9 for pocket carry. It's a heavier small gun. But for me, I carry a Wilson Combat X-Tac 1911 Commander size. I saved up for 6 months for that thing, and I can hit what I'm aiming at a distance. I'm happy with the 45 caliber, and it hides beautifully. You can put it in outside the waistband holster, which is what I wear. Put a shirt over it, and you're good to go. You can't do that with a Glock. You can't do that with a Springfield FN. It's just the slimness of it, and it's such a beautiful gun to shoot. But some people don't like 1911, so, you know, it's a personal
thing. Right. What about, so let me ask you, from me, what is your favorite pistol? What's your favorite firearm in a pistol format? Revolver, anything.
That's like saying, what's my favorite child?
I know. That was a loaded question.
Well, there's so many great guns. I mean, I can just give you a quick five. Do you really just want one? You want one favorite gun?
You can give me top three. You give me top three. I'll make it easy.
For me, top three favorite guns. I have a Grizzly Custom Guns Marlin 1894 and 357 that I just love shooting that gun. I'm a lever gun guy, and I love that. The top three. Okay. Shotguns. I love my Benelli Supernova pump. But it's like being Zeus. And having a lightning bolt you can throw. It's just an amazing machine that doesn't cough or hiccup, and I love recoil. I know some people don't like it, but I really enjoy a gun that gives you a big old blast, and it's such a versatile gun as well. So that's two. Third, I would say I really like the Smith & Wesson 686 with a 4-inch or 4.5-inch barrel. It is the gun. It's a gun that says gun. And it's a smooth shooting. And I'm a revolver guy. I mean, if you can shoot a revolver well, you can shoot any pistol well. And it's just a classic. And you can fire 357 loads out of that and actually get a second shot in a reasonable amount of time after the first. So I would say those are my three favorite, but there are so many great guns out there. We're living in a golden age of firearms. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very partial to my Kimber. I'm a big fan of the Kimbers. They are pricey, but in my opinion, they're very much worth it. So let me ask you. You mentioned that we are in a golden age. So it kind of leads me to another question. There's been, I don't know. There was a time, it seems like, in the 80s and 90s. There really wasn't a lot of advancement technology or anything in weapons or ammunition. Lately, that has seemed to really come up. I mean, we have, and I'd like to get your opinion on the Ruger ARX ammo, but you have things like the ARX, these copper polymer ammunitions. There's things coming on with optics. Just so many other technologies and advancements. What are you seeing, or what are your thoughts on that we've seen recently? Do you kind of, some people think it's, The wars of the last 16 years have driven a lot of that, like they have in medical advancements. Other people think, well, people have just gotten sharp with computers and CAD drawings and that kind of stuff. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think there's been that much technological advancement lately. I hate to throw cold water on that theory, but certainly red dots are great, and that's a wonderful innovation. I don't think we've really seen the possibilities that are coming ahead. 3D printing allows us to do stuff that we couldn't do before with muzzle brakes and parts of ARs. I think, you know, we're still dealing with a technology that goes back, 2,000 to 3,000 years. I don't think there's been too much advancement. I mean, certainly the AR-15, the modularity of it, and ability to change the stock so that suit all types of shooters. There's been some great stuff coming along, but you just talked about a Kimber. I mean, that's a design that goes back to Rayford 1911, and yet it's still a perfect firearm for what it does. So, you know, in terms of, I would say the biggest innovation in the firearms industry has been price. You know, that the you can buy an amazing rifle, an AR-15, for $700. You know, there are so many well-priced, mass-produced guns out there. And yeah. I think that's been the big innovation, has been on the production side rather than on the design side. I like the smaller pistols, the AR pistols. One of the greatest innovations has been the SB Tactical Brace, otherwise known as the SIG Brace, so that you can have a AR-style pistol and don't have to get a tax stamp as long as you don't shoulder it when you're firing it. I mean, that to me opens up a whole world of possibilities. That really redefined the category of the AR pistol. But I see a lot of guns. it takes a lot to impress me these days. There's some great technology, lasers and they weren't around before. But I mean, still, you put a 1911 in your hand, you've got all the gun you need, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. What about ammo, though? Like for example, the ARX ammo and some of this other stuff that they're trying to get innovative with. Do you think it's a gimmick, or is there really some stuff happening there?
Well, ARX ammo is excellent. It's wonderful stuff. That's the polycarbonate nose ammo, right?
The low recoil, like half the grains of any normal round. Not worried about a lot of punch through or hitting secondary targets.
Yeah, the disclaimer you need to put in there is that you need to test any round you buy. You need to test it in your particular gun to see how it works. Because some of this stuff is pretty finicky. Some guns don't like that polycase ammo. But, you look at the 9mm round now is a very serious caliber. You're not going to feel undergunned if you have that as opposed to a 45. I think that's been the big innovation. 9mm stuff is just amazingly, the hollow point technology has come along so far that you really are able to shoot a soft shooting 9 and not have to worry about quote, stopping power, unquote. So, yeah, the ammo has come a long, long way. There's some gimmicks out there. There's some ammo I would not recommend. But, I'll go ahead and say it. GT Rip Ammo, not my friend. And they don't like me very much, so it's mutual. But generally speaking, there's just tremendous quality ammo out there. I just wish there was more of it, especially when it comes to 22.
Yeah, Rob, there's definitely a shortage out there, and a lot of, a couple of years ago, I guess it's been 2 years ago, when the great conspiracy theories about, where did all the good ammo go. But I kind of want to shift gears and ask a couple of different questions for you. Because you guys really are seen as the subject matter experts, and, you bring so much to the table in terms of, a broad spectrum and a wealth of information and knowledge. Have any legislators reached out to you to provide input? Have you consulted with any of either staffers or legislators directly? Does the NRA use you as a reference on anything? How have you guys kind of fit into that scheme? Because we're in a tremendously politically charged debate right now, and we're at this golden age, but we're also at this very volatile stage, and really curious from the lawmakers' perspective, is anyone else going to you for information? Because we see y'all everywhere, but do they look at you?
No, it's a simple answer. As anyone has looked at the legislation that's been proposed for gun control, they don't know a thing about guns, and they don't use Google, obviously, because there's just such stupid laws that they pass. They have no clue. Legislators on our side still are pretty clueless. We do have some gun enthusiasts in the Republican Party who know that a clip is not a magazine, but generally speaking, no, they're completely ignorant, and they don't want to know, and they don't call us, and no. I put my mobile phone number on the website. So anybody who wants to call me can call me on my cell. That includes your audience. Good luck to me for that. But no, they
prepare
never
for a lot of drunken texts.
Well, that's okay. I mean, part of being who we are is that we respond to our readers. We value them highly. All of my writers, by the way, and my management all started as commentators on the site. That's how I found them. So that's the kind of connection we have with our readers, is that we occasionally find great writers there and we elevate them and pay them. But the NRA is a world unto itself. They're starting to get better at their PR. They're starting to be a little more responsive. As you know, they usually take a week to respond to a mass shooting, and which is ridiculous. A week in internet times is like, I don't know, 10 years in newspaper time. And they're getting better, but they don't ming with us much. They don't hang out with us. We like them. We criticize them for stuff that we don't think they do that we think is ill-advised. But no, there's not much connection there. We are part of the discussion in the sense that a lot of people who are in the gun rights world use us to get their arguments together and test out different ways of putting things. So we're kind of in the gestalt in the gun rights world. But we are a little ghetto. We're not really connected. The gun blogosphere is not really connected. We meet up with gun bloggers at industry events maybe 4 times a year, but there really isn't the kind of coordination that there should be. There really should be. We know for a fact that the gun control complex has meetings to decide strategy, come up with talking points. There's a journal list for all of the anti-gun websites out there, and there should be a pro-gun journalist so we can coordinate ourselves together. We've talked to the NRA about it. That nothing's come of that. So there really should be that kind of coordination that you're talking about, but there isn't.
Yeah, no, like, I'm not sure if I'm shocked or saddened by this. You know, I was really, you know, kind of hoping to hear that, you know, some of the lawmakers that we have in different places, you know, we're being more proactive, like knowing what's on the future agenda, knowing that, you know, that a lot of people's decision for, you know, the highest office, a lot of those decisions are being based off of, you know, the first five, you know, amendments to the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the, you know, part of the Bill of Rights. And, you know, number one and two, you know, those two issues right now are like the biggest issues. And you're part of both of them. You know, here you are, like an actual objective site, and you know you're the subject matter expert, and you're not corrupted by, you know, big dollars. You know, I'm not saying the NRA.
I'm working on that part, by the way. I'm working.
Yeah, no, like, and I wish the best for you on your corruption, but seriously, the like a lot of people look at the NRA as, you know, kind of, you know, institutional. You know, they look out for, you know, the big picture versus, you know, the little picture. And, you know, it's sometimes, you know, like I like you said, you know, I've seen comments, you know, or even, you know, content on your site where kind of inferred like they missed the forest for the trees. And, man, I was just really hoping to hear that you guys were part, you know, more of that dialogue, because, you know, it's too bad. You know, it's too bad that y'all are not. The, you know, we're seeing other sites, you know, I can't believe I'm, like, giving this dude, you know, like, I'm not really giving him props, but, like, InfoWars, like, people are starting to, like, lawmakers are looking out and looking and paying attention to what, like, InfoWars are saying about different things, because, like, they're trying to understand, you know, what their demographics and what, you know, their constituents are thinking. And, you know, we saw that in Texas last year with Jade Helm. And, you know, like, here, you know, the, you know, InfoWars, whatever, that blog, I mean, that, you know, caused the governor of the greatest, you know, state in the union to like dial back some of what he was doing and kind of pander a little bit to that blog. And you know, I was kind of like, I really just, because you guys are doing such great stuff, you have so many people writing that are just extremely intelligent, you know, well put together. I mean, I know several of your writers, you know, JWT and Tyler Key, and like those guys, like, man, they do great stuff. They know exactly what they're talking about. You know, they're well researched, tremendously connected, see more than just what's right in front of them. And I was just really kind of shocked to hear you just say that, like, people aren't even bringing you into the discussion.
Well, our writers are all people who have to tell the truth. They have a story to tell, or they have a sort of compulsion to do it. We do what we do for the honor of truth. I didn't set out to do that. A lot of people have accused, not a lot, but some have accused me of just being your typical Jewish entrepreneur who'll say anything to make money. And that's not true. I am Jewish, but I'm not that way. I never set out to make this into a hugely profitable business. We do what we do, and the influence we have is hard to know. And it's not really that important to us. If we get a number of eyeballs that can pay the rent and pay the writers so that they can do what they do, that's good enough. I can't really be responsible for how our material is perceived. We just tell the truth, and we see what happens. And, you know, I've been very grateful to have the readership. But occasionally we get things like a reader will say, I was thinking about a gun. I saw a review, which is how most people come to our website. They Google a review and then they come to the website. And they say, well, I started reading a little bit more about the Second Amendment and about stuff you were saying. And now I'm actually a gun rights supporter and a gun rights voter. And we have a lot of people who make that transition. A lot, meaning I have no idea exactly how many, but in the comments we read that. So I might see that comment, I don't know, 5 times a month. And that's just, to me, that's enough to know that somebody who was just not switched on to our constitutional, our natural civil and constitutional right to keep and bear arms and its importance. You know, if we can convert a few people like that, and they convert a few people, you know, if they can start seeing the truth about what's going on, that's the gratification I like. And just besides, it's fun for us. This is fun work. I mean, you know, of course there's a serious part to it, but it's nice to be able to tell someone to F off and die when they're doing something wrong, or be sarcastic about Mayor Bloomberg, or, you know, to be able to just not have any editorial filter other than good literary value. It's a wonderfully liberating thing. I'm 57 years old. I've been a journalist since I've been 14. I was so sick and tired of all those gatekeepers, all those people who would have to put a spin on my writing or butcher it with their editing or take out the best jokes or whatever. This is really liberating stuff for all our writers. I edit with a gentle hand, they may disagree, but this sheer joy of doing it is something that gets us up every morning. I never say, oh God, I gotta go to work again. And plus we started the Texas Firearms Festival, which is October 14th through 16th this year at Liberty Hill in Texas. And that's been an enormous amount of fun too. So yeah, it'd be nice if the world was a better place and people would actually base their arguments on rational thought. Which we offer plenty of, but you know, whatever. We just do what we have to do and see where the chips fall.
Well, Rob, I know we got one more question for you. From Troy, and then after that, we're gonna have to wrap it up. But thanks for coming on, Troy. Go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, one more, Rob. I just want to ask, every time that there's a mass shooting or something, there's this panic run on guns and people start, circulating every gun website that emails me all the time, sends me Obama's coming after your guns kind of thing. I guess just kind of what your impression is on that. You know, we saw it after Newtown shooting that ARs that were selling for $500 or $600 went up to $1,200-$1,300 for a base, even an ugly looking, 5.56. Not going to mention the name SIG, but anyways, just what your thoughts are about that every time that something like that happens or Obama says something on the news that there's this big mass run, he is credited with being the best salesman for guns in this nation.
Well, I think that's perfectly understandable, natural, and positive thing to do. I think that's absolutely right. Listen, one quick thing. You remember how we said, oh, the Democrats mostly have said they're not going to come for your guns. Don't be ridiculous. It's not going to happen. These are just little things to help keep the guns out of the dangerous people's hands, right? They're not going to come for the guns has been their mantra for years. You remember what happened in Katrina, right? What happened? They came for the guns. They came for the guns. So all that, all those people who were worried about people coming for the guns, said, yeah, guess what? They are going to come for the guns. They did come for the guns. It's the same way with the idea we've got to buy an AR before they're made illegal. Look what happened in Massachusetts. The Massachusetts Attorney General woke up, looked at the law that says about assault weapons, quote unquote, and then the next day, in a single stroke of the pen, outlawed all AR-style firearms in the Bay State of Massachusetts. So anybody says, oh, you know, they're not going to suddenly decide you can't buy these guns. Well, that's exactly what they did, and that's exactly what they want to do. And if California could do it right away, they'd do it. And New Jersey, if they could do it, they'd do it. Now, I'm not too worried in Texas. And we here down in Texas tend to have a lot of guns generally. But, yeah, if I was living back in Rhode Island where I'm from, and there was some sort of political move by Mr. Obama or Ms. Clinton or something, yeah, I'd go and buy a couple extra guns too. I think that's a perfectly natural and actually a great thing, great for the industry, great for the individual to have another firearm, great for this country that our civilians are armed against criminals and psychopaths and terrorists and their own government come to it. I mean, it's wonderful that there are these gun sales. I wish that more people would buy guns. Just wish there were a bigger population of gun owners. And, you know, I think the mainstream media has created this kind of ghetto that doesn't let us get our message out. And we have to break through that. And that's what we try and do in our own small little way. So, you know, I think it's great that people go out and buy guns when they feel paranoid. You know, because guess what? You're not paranoid when they're actually trying to get you.
Well, Rob, we appreciate you coming on tonight. You know, everyone, thetruthaboutguns.com is Rob's site. Like you said, you know, they got a plethora of folks. They took it from a blog to a small media company. Rob, we're excited about the Texas Firearm Fest. And everyone knows where to find you at thetruthaboutguns.com. If you want his cell phone number, go there. Drunk text him later. He'll appreciate it. But, Rob, really, thanks for taking the time and coming on the show.
Well, thanks for the great work you guys do, too. I'm a big fan. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you
very
much.
Troy, like, I don't know how we do it.
Man, we just get some great, great guests. I don't know, man. What an awesome guy. And I could see him being a repeat guest in the future because there's just no shortage of stuff to talk about. I had more stuff I wanted to ask, but boy, that hour goes by quick.
Yeah, so. It does. There are five things I still wanted to ask him, but we'll bring him back on. I'll talk to him afterwards and see if we can get him back on because I, as we were talking, I was getting people sending me questions. So I really want to offer them the opportunity to do that. But I want to offer you the opportunity to kind of do what you want to do, man.
Yeah, I'm gonna rant a little bit, but before I rant, I'm gonna play a little song here. It's a song that's kind of very appropriate. It's from Justin Moore, and we're gonna play this. And on the backside of that, I'll do my bald man rant, and then we'll be playing our brand new outro that just recorded today. So here's Justin Moore. The song is Guns.
I started out with a 410 and moved to a 20 gauge. Every squirrel and rabbit in Dallas County knew my name. I sat on the stand with Pawpaw from the time I was 3 years old. When I was 8, I used a muzzle loader to kill my first doe. These days I go down to Walmart and they sell them in the back. Some people want to take them away. Why don't you go busting boys that selling crack? Guns, whether Remingtons or Glocks. Come on, man, it ain't like I'm a-slinging them on the block. And listen, son, as long as I'm alive and breathing, you won't take my guns. If there ever was a time we need them, I'd say it'd be today. When we're letting them tear us, watch cable TV and walk out of Guantanamo Bay. I just try to do the right thing and raise my family in this land. Treating me like you want to be treated, and that's what I call a man. If we don't have them, what do we do? Tell me where we're gonna go. Somebody breaks into my house, I'm gonna need my gold $44. Come on, man, it ain't like I'm a-slangin' them on the block. I'm gonna tell you once and listen, son. As long as I'm alive and breathing, you won't have my guns. Listen. Glocks. Come on, man, it ain't like I'm swinging on the Glock. I'm gonna tell you once and listen, son. As long as I'm alive and breathing, and I'm still breathing, you won't take my gun.
And there you go. It's a little Justin Moore, Guns. I thought it was very appropriate for tonight's guest. So I got about a minute to do my mad minute here. So today on my blog, boohammer.com, be sure to check that out. I wrote a little bit about the Sergeant Major of the Army, who I like very much. I never met him. He was a younger guy when I retired. But, you know, I really like everything he's been standing for. But he came out today. A story came out today. I wrote about that he's saying there's not enough women. I don't know how well it's going to go over because I know our next show, Fem Vets, is coming up. And some of those folks are coming online here. So hopefully I don't tick those ladies off. But I don't think I will. But, yeah, he's saying that there's not enough females looking to get into the combat arms jobs, and they need to do more to get them to be, you know, armor, you know, tankers and cav scouts and infantrymen and all that kind of stuff. And they need to do to get them in there. It just amazes me and ticks me off because someone came up with a good idea, Ferry, to make our army a social experiment. And they thought, someone thought, oh, it's real great. Everyone's going to want to go do this stuff. You know, they're going to want to be grunts and live in a suck. And the reality is that, you know, women are serving in great positions all through our military and have done well in careers and been promoted and served in the top positions in our military. They really didn't need that. And now they're just confused and wondering why they have barely enough women to volunteer to serve in these combat arms jobs. And until they do, they really can't get this thing going. So just kind of pisses me off. You know, they didn't have a problem. But they went and generated a solution, and I say that in quotes, of what they thought needed to be done. So we'll see how that goes. But you know, I hope the Sergeant Major of the Army is, that's not really him. I hope it's him just bowing to whatever pressure he's under. But the reality is, if women and men want to go do those jobs, they'll sign up and go do those jobs. those jobs aren't meant for everyone. There's a lot of men that don't want to do those kind of jobs either, that do other jobs, and we need those other jobs. So anyways, that was kind of my rant tonight. And with that, I want to play my outro for me and Toby. Everyone, we hope you guys have a great night. Thank you for joining us here on Stew in the Night. Be sure and join us next week. Good night, Toby. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Stew in the Night Radio. We hope you enjoyed your time with us because we have enjoyed sharing our time with you. Be sure to check out stewinthenun.com in addition to asking us questions and interacting with us on our Facebook page and Twitter. We look forward to seeing you next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern here on the Veteran Radio Center. Also, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Warrior Media Solutions, BlueHammer.com, Veteran Outdoors, Graybeard Publishing, and of course, Mighty Oaks Warrior Foundation. Thank you again, and have a good night.